Medical professionals tell us over and over again how important it is to understand a patient's medical history, the story of that person's health. When you get right down to it, then, storytelling is important to medicine. Today's guest demonstrates that in a number of ways. Dr. Jay Baruch is an associate professor of emergency medicine at Brown University in Providence. He has had his work published in a number of magazines. His book of stories, 14 Stories, came out in 2007, and another book is scheduled for release next year. Dr. Jay Baruch is visiting the Rogue Valley for a session tonight at the Smullen Center in Medford on why healthcare providers should think like creative writers. Dr. Jay Baruch, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
I noticed that one of those journals that published you is Ars Medica, which is about the connection between healing and arts, which seems like a very natural place for you.
It is. I mean, it's a great title, and it's a wonderful journal. If I'm allowed to put in a plug for a wonderful journal up in Toronto, Canada.
Ars Medica is that one. Okay. So you apparently majored in English as an undergrad. Did you go into medicine to pay for your writing habit?
I went to college actually to be an English professor. You know, I loved writing. I loved reading. It was a no-brainer for me. And I ended up gravitating into medicine largely because of some clinical experiences that I had, volunteer work that really sort of drew me into the meaningfulness of medicine. And I think most people who go into it at the core have some deep sort of moral purpose, of sense of why this is an important work. You know, whether it's medicine, whether it's nursing, whether it's, you know, social work. I think working with people, especially people who are somewhat vulnerable or facing certain challenges and obstacles.
A little more direct intervention in the human condition than teaching people English?
Which is funny.
And I'm not running down teaching English, by
the way. No, I mean, which is funny because now, you know, over the course of my career, I've sort of gone full circle where I'm actually using a lot of those skills. I'm ends up teaching in a way that I probably never anticipated this arc. But I'm actually doing a lot of what I intended to do 25 years ago, but through a clinical lens.
So in a sense, you got to do one of those do what you love and the money will follow kinds of things, where you're doing both medicine and teaching. And English and writing.
Yes. You know, if I'm negotiating to see if I can find a 30-hour day, and then I'll be really happy.
Well, that is a good question. I mean, how do you manage to get in all the things you do in all the time you have? Because obviously, if there's another collection of stories coming out next year, those stories are either written or you're probably always writing while you're teaching, while you're doing tours like the one that takes you through Medford tonight.
Right. So, I think some people try to say, like, how do you balance it? But I don't really, you know, consider it balance. One of my bosses equates it to, like, being a truck, like a pickup truck, you know, going, racing down a road, a curving road, and everything in the back is sort of lunging to one side and lunging to the other side and lunging back to the other side. So in the end, I think you get down to the bottom of the hill. But ultimately, I think a lot of it that, you know, I have a very, very sort of understanding and caring wife and a son who is allows me this time to do this work. But it's a cautious balance I must sort of negotiate, but it works.
Did your writing always go on? I mean, is it the kind of thing that you probably started as a teenager when you were thinking about majoring in English, and you've just continued ever since? Did it ever stop, I guess, is the question, while you were studying medicine?
Yeah. I mean, it stopped. It stopped at several points. And I was one of those people that, you know, writing was so important to me that I didn't have the maturity as a younger age to actually give it my all, because I was afraid to sort of to get the feedback that I needed to actually become better, until I became a little bit older and I was in medical school and I really was pursuing it in a more serious way. I've had moments where I've sort of left medicine to write more, spend more time writing. Ultimately, I found I actually wrote less when I had more time.
Really?
And so finding that balance, actually incorporating writing into my medical life, is a more – giving me – having that structure and having to make use of the time that I have has actually been a more fruitful and productive method for me.
When you got away from medicine, were you still writing about medicine? I mean, do you ever write anything non-medicine, I guess?
I actually started writing non-medical stuff. I actually wrote two really bad novels when I was – I mean, they were bad. I mean, one was really bad, and the other one was kind of bad. But the second bad novel started venturing into medicine. And ultimately, I did start writing about medicine because a lot of the issues and a lot of the challenges, a lot of the frustrations, a lot of the emotional sort of the emotional power that I was sort of grappling with, I was able to examine it and understand it and break it apart and play with it through my writing. And so it became sort of a more essential part of my writing, but almost by accident.
So the analytical tools that come with age and with knowing more about medicine assisted your writing process that much more.
And also the being able to sort of know yourself better.
That's a big one, isn't it?
And it's huge, you know. It's been said that writing is a lot about learning to write is about breaking down, you know, being able to break down the barriers, mm-hmm. you know, and get to those dark places, get to those places where normally we might sort of we're not going to go there. Like I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there in my conversation with so and so. We're not going to go there with thinking about why I thought something. But in the writing, it's a great opportunity to just go to those places where you might not feel comfortable otherwise, and you can do it through fiction.
All right, let's talk about what those dark places are when we come back. We'll take a short break here on the Jefferson Exchange and come back and talk more with Dr. Jay Baruch. He's the author of a book called 14 Stories, Doctors, Patients, and Other Strangers. He also talks to healthcare audiences about how they should be thinking like creative writers. All that and more coming up on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jay Baruch. Dr. Jay Baruch is an MD, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at Brown University in Providence, and a writer. He has a book out called 14 Stories, Doctors, Patients, and Other Strangers from several years ago, and he is working on another book due out next year, and he travels the country talking about why healthcare providers should think like creative writers. A session by that name is set for tonight at 6:30 at the Smullen Center on the campus at the Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center in Medford. You can join us here now on the Jefferson Exchange and talk about the similarities between medicine and storytelling and how one can actually help the other quite a bit. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So I did get a chance to leaf through some of the stories in 14 Stories, Doctors, Patients, and Other Strangers. You clear this up pretty quickly in the front of the book. Are the 14 stories true, but the names changed?
No. I mean, they're fiction from the earliest. And, the stories probably, if they begin anywhere based in reality, it's actually an emotional place rather than sort of an actual clinical situation. The fiction has been a great way to sort of splay your emotions on the page and invest mm-hmm. them in different characters and to play with circumstances. And, oftentimes, sometimes you say, God, I can't say X to a patient, or I can't feel the way I feel. But you can do that in fiction. You say, what if I do that? Like, what if I said that? What would happen? And so it's actually an interesting way to think about sort of fiction as sort of a simulation, like almost a life simulator. I'm gonna play that out.
Right.
I'm gonna play that. I'm gonna go to those places.
Yeah, what happens?
But if they're based in reality, it's like this. It's an emotional truth rather than sort of reality truth.
You just said, I'm going to go to those places, and you were talking before the break about going to the dark places.
Yeah.
And I would certainly understand any discomfort you might feel about talking about what those dark places are, but you got them in print now. So, I mean, what are some of the things that I'm going to guess you surprised yourself at some points along the way.
Oh, absolutely. So I have a couple of stories in that particular book, in 14 stories, that involve dealing with challenges of dealing with homeless patients, and in the book, there's one particular story where called Bed Rest, where this homeless person has the bad flu, has a bad viral syndrome, and the discharge is like, listen, get plenty of bed rest.
And there's no bed for them to go to.
And there's no bed that this person is going to be, the bed is going to go into the street. And it always sort of bothered me when I was working in, you know, I work in a lot of urban, you know, populations and challenging situations. And you can't necessarily admit everyone, you know, has these symptoms either. But this sense of sort of theater, sort of an engaging in sort of a set response to a particular situation that you know is not ideal, you know there are options perhaps aren't out there, and what do? And you sort of go. Sometimes you go through the motions. You do what you think is the right. You go through the motions. You play the part. You're right. You know, get plenty of bed rest. You know, drink plenty of fluids. Take. And that's why then another story, you know, in I follow this one particular character where, you know, he ends up getting revenge on the doctor. And then later on, something else happens to this one particular character who ends up having a recurring theme.
I noticed that you're not always the doctor. In fact, more often it seems like you're the patient in these stories.
Or I have a story, one of the stories that has that particular homeless person in it. Actually, the story was told from the point of view of the ER janitor.
Really?
Called road test, and I think we don't realize in healthcare oftentimes that the people who are the eyes and ears and really know what's going on, who sort of size us up. You know, are these people who play all these vital sort of important roles in the hospital, in the emergency department, that perhaps aren't directly responsible for patient care, but they're responsible for the essence of the place. And the story I actually was having a lot of problems with because I was, you know, writing it from the perspective of the physician didn't feel right, like I was leaving out a certain perspective of the patient. The patient, I couldn't really get into his mind all that well either, and it felt somewhat artificial. And I felt I was losing something. I was losing the doctor's perspective by only having from this other guy's perspective who wasn't quite right in the head. But then, like writing it from the janitor's perspective, who's dealing with his own personal tragedy and having to work this overnight, you know, work an overnight shift. We don't think about other people who are coming and working overnights, who knows this patient better than the doctor does, who actually has a relationship with this doctor, with this patient, in a way that the doctor does not. And he has seen all these young doctors in training who's come through, and he's really sort of the moral center of this story.
So we have noticed from talking to other successful authors in the past that they're really good at noticing things. The level of detail they're able to write is because the level of detail they're able to notice,
right,
which is a good skill for a writer, but certainly a good skill for a medical doctor as well. So,
absolutely.
I mean, so did that come from Jay Baruch, the doctor, Jay Baruch, the writer, or was it always part of Jay Baruch?
I don't know.
When did this start, Jay? Exactly what age?
I don't know. Like, if you open up the box, like what parts were there in the beginning? Like the Jay Baruch box. Like, I don't know. I don't know what was included in the instruction manual. Right. Uh-huh. All I know it was probably unreadable, and I was put together like this. What you see with a couple of extra things missing. But seriously, I don't know. I think I've always been curious in that way. I think my wife would probably say, you know, there are a lot of things you don't notice. I wish you would notice. But I do think I'm tuned into things that perhaps are slightly different that I think help me as a writer. And a lot of those skills, actually those writer skills of sort of observation, thinking about character, thinking about tone, paying attention to voice and language, are really a lot of the skills that I end up using in my work taking care of patients in the emergency department.
Jay Baruch is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Dr. Jay Baruch, an associate professor of emergency medicine at Brown University, a published author with articles in a number of publications, his own book of short stories called 14 Stories, out for 7 years now, and another one coming, and he's visiting the Rogue Valley tonight for Why Healthcare Providers Should Think Like Creative Writers at 6:30 at the Smullen Center in Medford. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. So not only do you get to delve into your dark places, and I guess the dark places of humanity at large in writing fiction, but it seems like it must be liberating for an MD to be able to write something like breast cancer ate her in pieces. This is a direct quote from one of the stories, rather than the way you'd have to explain that in the medical world.
When you're writing, you know, one thing I have when I'm writing that I don't necessarily have in my work is time. You know, you have time to like make the, you know, to really think about a moment, a thing, and to reflect upon what you've done and the experiences that you're that you're exposed to, that you're interpreting, that you're trying to respond to, and you really have this really intimate this intimate way of sort of making language fresh, and oftentimes it's not coming from me. It's just you're just absorbing, like we're magpies, you know, we're sort of absorbing all these interesting insights that, you know, patients and people around us sort of bring to the, you know, bring to the conversation.
Grabbing bits and pieces of stuff.
And something a patient says spurs something else in my mind. And again, it's I think it's about sort of making these connections. It's like making connections where perhaps it doesn't seem obvious.
And I have to believe that, for example, there must be some catharsis in here, too. The narrator breathing refers to his doctor as the bastard.
Yeah.
a few demons you're exercising there yourself?
Well, you know, one of the reasons why I ended up started writing this collection was that a lot of the physician stories, physician narratives, at that time at least, really placed, you know, physicians as heroes. And if we erred, if we said something, if we behaved badly, if we said something we shouldn't have had, it felt like there was something learned at the end. There was like this parable, like, okay, I did this, but this is what I learned in the end. And the truth of the matter is like, we're human beings. You know, I mean, personally, I try my best, but I'm not perfect. There are moments I wish I can reclaim and say something different, respond less emotionally, be more caring. I've written that sometimes, you know, there's a paradox in writing about patients sometimes, because, you know, when I'm writing, I try to write about characters that readers will really care about deeply. And then sometimes while I'm working, you know, I care about real people. And sometimes you wonder, like, why don't I care more?
Well, I wonder about that, because as a medical doctor, I mean, it's your job to maintain some sense of distance here. I mean, if you got emotionally caught up in every case, you'd probably be a basket case yourself in pretty short order,
right,
dealing with the suffering of other human beings.
Right.
So there's a different level of emotional involvement between Jay Baruch, the doctor and the medical school trainer, and Jay Baruch, the writer, I would think.
Right. And I think we're getting back to sort of this old age debate. You know, it's like, you know, can you really care that much? I mean, can doctors really be emotionally engaging with their patients? Will it eventually be damaging in some fundamental way? And I don't know. I think, you know, I think we're very polarized in that debate. And I think the answer probably is somewhere in the middle. You know, it's like, you know, there's a difference between sort of being total cold and calculating automatons, which we should not be. And yet we also want our doctors to be clear-headed enough to make decisions that are going to be good decisions for us. And I think it depends upon what we're going through with medically and what we want from physicians. But I also feel that, you know, we let ourselves off the hook in some way. I think we're somewhere in the middle. I think we can care at some fundamental baseline caring state, some basal level of caring.
A little kernel of caring.
Right, a little kernel. Right.
Well, so how do you counsel your medical students to approach the job and to view themselves? Because when you talk about the fact that a lot of stories about doctors tend to view them as heroes. I mean, and there are people who tend to view doctors as godlike. Anyway, they have all the answers. They know how to heal, that sort of thing. But they are still human beings.
Right.
Who have flaws and emotions and make mistakes. And so, I mean, imagine there's a fair amount of breaking down your medical students, almost like boot camp, to make sure that they don't get too high an opinion of themselves.
Well, first off, it's really interesting about the fact that there is this great call for the fact that, you know, we want physicians to be humans, but we don't really allow them or permit them to have some human traits that perhaps demonstrate human frailty, that demonstrate the fact that we will make mistakes, that we will err. They want certain aspects that are associated with being quote unquote human. I think the best way about sort of teaching medical students is by being honest with them, you know, and saying, you know, there are moments that you're going to do things that you're not good, that you are a human being, and you have to be conscious of your own biases, your own buttons that get pushed, your own responses to this, that all patients aren't the same and that all doctors aren't the same. You know, there isn't like this cookie cutout of a patient and this cookie cutout of a doctor, and the doctor-patient relationship is somewhere where the cookies meet.
Right.
You know, it doesn't. I mean, we're all complicated. You know, the same person who comes in with the same exact heart attack is going to have two different experiences. The disease is going to mean something differently from them. They're going to come from different backgrounds, different family structure, different sense of hope or how they interpret the experience. It's going to be different. And students have to be aware that, you know, this how the experiences are interpreted and how our people will respond. There isn't one way to do it, and I try to model it by just listen. This is what I did. This is where I erred. This is how I made up for that. We are imperfect beings, and all we can do is strive to do it better the next time. Is to be aware of what we did and to strive to do it better the next time.
Dr. Jay Baruch, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is also a writer as well as a medical school professor and an ER doc. We'll be talking about why healthcare providers should think like creative writers tonight in Medford. The story called Laceration Repair in the book 14 Stories, there's a quote here. I began suturing without the usual comments. Is it hard for non-medical people to grasp the way that healthcare people look at bodies? I mean, it's really not everybody who could not only stand to see blood and bodily fluids that often, but also be able to do things like sew up human beings.
Yeah, I mean, there's times when I'm suturing up, when people will go, "Oh, you must be good at like sewing up flies for fly fishing," you know. So people have different interpretation of the value of that skill.
Right. Hey, look at the way you wrap that thread. That's really good.
But it's really interesting about, you know, how do we perceive the body? Our students take anatomy, you know, they dissect the body down to the smallest little, you know, nerve and artery, and they know this, and they know it cold. And yet I had a student once in a course that we taught, that we took art students, and there was a course with art students and medical students, and some of the first year students who were in the class, who just finished anatomy, were taking some of the art students through the into the anatomy lab. And this first year student who just finished anatomy said, "You know, I just finished, you know, knowing this body like I never knew a body. And this is the first time I ever really looked at it."
Hmm.
You know, so this idea of, like, can we break things to such a granular level, you know, that it's you think you're looking, you think you're seeing, but you're not. Like, you're naming, you're looking at it with a different set of eyes, with a different purpose in mind, with a different aim in mind. And somehow in a different context, you're sort of looking at this thing that you think you know so well with as if it's foreign, as if it's foreign and fresh at the same time.
In a sense, you have a gift with that, it seems like, because you not only get to deal with things on that medical level, but you also, as a writer, get to think about interpretations and things like metaphors, like referring to the descending colon as looking like driving through the Lincoln Tunnel.
Right.
As you did in one of your stories. From the New Jersey side or the New York side?
Much traffic either way.
But yeah, I mean, that is a gift to be able to look at things both as the medical guy and as the person who still sees a sense of wonder and possibility. And
but you know, I sense that we probably all look at things somewhat metaphorically. We interpret experiences in terms of other things. You know, we might not be cognizant of it. I have a way of which I demonstrate it with my writing, but. Even like colleagues and students who say they're not writers, you know, for whatever reason, when you actually get them writing, when they hand in things, they're also, you know, it's amazing how you discover how your mind is working when you're writing.
So what are you teaching the students then? I mean, there is a writing component, a humanities component to what they're learning from you in medical school?
There is. You know, there's a lot of times it's sort of on the margins of the curriculum we're trying to get. We have certain creativity components that are actually in the curriculum. A lot of what we do is sort of through electives that students can take either at the university. We teach at the university and at the medical school as well. So we try to get it in there. You know, gotta get it in there.
Gotta get some gotta stuff get in there besides all the doctor stuff. Yeah. Right? Dr. Jay Baruch is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Teaches emergency medicine at Brown University in Providence, Rhode Island. Published author and also travels the country talking about why healthcare providers should think like creative writers. We'll come back and talk more with Dr. Baruch. And if you'd like to join us, we'll take your phone calls and emails as well. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Jay Baruch, MD, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at Brown University. He's a published author as well. His book, 14 Stories, has been out for a couple of years now, and there is another set of stories coming out in another book scheduled for release next year. He's in Medford tonight, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Asante Smullen Health Education Center at what we used to call Rogue Valley Medical Center. Now it's Asante Rogue Regional Medical Center in Medford, talking about why healthcare providers should think like creative writers. You can join this discussion on the Exchange. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Before we narrow down to the focus on medicine and creative writing and how they help each other, just some general medical stuff. Life in the emergency room. Is it anything like the mayhem that they show on TV shows like ER and Grey's Anatomy, et cetera?
Well, I don't know if we're having nearly as much fun as the characters in Grey's Anatomy, and fun with a capital F. But I must say that so much of emergency medicine, I think, is mythologized, you know, for its blood and its mayhem. And I work in a level one trauma center. We are very, very busy with one of the busiest emergency departments in New England. And even with that, you know, there's a lot of baseline stuff, and then there's craziness. You know, a lot of baseline stuff, there's craziness. And if there were shows about the sort of the ebb and flow of the emergency department, you know, people probably wouldn't watch it for a large chunk of the time. But we're always busy. I mean, we're always busy. And it's the stuff that on the surface doesn't seem that profoundly fascinating, that really is our bread and butter.
Like,
you know,
what?
That's really the bread and butter.
Like what?
For example, you know, I worked, you know, Friday and Sunday and Monday overnights, you know, and without going into specifics, but, you know, it was one of those nights just that we saw probably 8 or 9 people with belly pain for multiple different reasons, different explanations, different backgrounds, and trying to sort through this, especially when people come back with recurrent pain, with chronic pain, chronic belly pain, chronic back pain, and people are sick. You know, people are sick. I mean, it's not. I will talk about this tonight. It's not. It's medicine is no longer like this puzzle with a piece missing, and it's your job to find that missing piece and to fix it. So people come in with sort of very, very complicated, you know, some very complicated stories, or, you know, large socioeconomic challenges and burdens that they're facing, and also there's mental health issues, family issues, and the medical piece is just one small part of like the larger piece, which if you're interested in story and you sort of engage with them on the level of patients on the level of story, a lot of interesting things can bubble up from those conversations when you just remove, just say, I'm not going to find out exactly what's going to cause you pain that no one has found out for the last 10 years. However, you know, let's talk. Let's talk about why you're here. What's going on with you, and try to tease out and have an experience.
This really gets to the heart, though, of what you're talking about, though, when why healthcare providers should think like creative writers, because you're looking for that level of detail that writers are so good at, that patients and medical providers aren't necessarily very good at. Because, I mean, there may be something that the person didn't think was significant, right? I mean, doesn't that happen fairly often in giving medical histories, getting them from the patients, I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about a little bit about tonight is the fact that, you know, what I think what creative writers and I think what all people who are engaged in the arts in some way are really good at is the essence of what they do is actually dealing with uncertainty and working with uncertainty. And ambiguity, and trying to make connections, and physicians, like, we're not always so great with uncertainty. The literature has shown that, you know, that given our druthers, oftentimes we'll try to find more information. You know, if we're uncertain, okay, let's order another test. Let's order something else, and we try to get that level of certainty where the truth of the matter is that we very rarely get to that point where we don't have to interpret. We don't have to sort of go there and make an assessment that based on less than complete information.
Is there often a real a time factor here? I mean, I can imagine it would take a whole lot longer to ask somebody all the details of what their medical issues have been for the last 10 years versus just running a test that might show you what the issue is.
Sometimes the test helps. But oftentimes the test is not like this glooming thing that's going to say, yes, you gave me the answer.
There's
this
no,
test.
Now we know.
Sometimes it works out that way. But oftentimes, unless you actually have a foundational understanding of the patient's needs and their problems, even if you do a test, even if you do a study, or you do a CAT scan or do some kind of diagnostic modality, if you got the story wrong, if you're not looking in the right place in the first place, like the best technology is not going to necessarily work on the right, on the wrong story.
So it's all about context then. I mean, you really need to know what,
context.
I mean, because as you mentioned, the people coming in the door with belly pain at the emergency department in Providence, you know, this person could have been on drugs for years, living in the gutter, you know, but doesn't look terribly different from the other person with the belly pain who lives pretty well in a Providence suburb.
Yeah. And it is. It's very contextual, but it also it's like it's being open to sort of asking sort of like different types of questions rather than the question is not, you know, what do you have, like what do you have, like what's your diagnosis, and I feel that sometimes as physicians that's what we really care about. We care about the biomedical concerns. And sometimes for good reasons, because there are time constraints. You know, now with electronic medical record, people are spending a lot of chunk of our time documenting. And but sometimes an easier question. I actually do think it's an easier question. Like, listen, what do you need? Like, why are you here? What can I do for you? Like, well, you know, this is what's been done in the past, but you're here now. It's, you know, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. You waited 3 hours. Like, what? Let's talk about why you're here now. And then sometimes what they do is they don't tell you a history. They tell you their story. They tell you something that at least gives you something to act on, to either whether it's reassuring them or giving them a way to sort of think about the issue, think about the problem, how to talk to their doctors. I can't talk to my doctor about this. Okay, maybe you frame it in this way. So there's a lot that you can do that might not fit under the banner of an intervention, like an antibiotic or a prescription or something, but you're giving them something to take home with you. You've given them something from the experience.
Which must make for some interesting instructions to medical students and the people you talk to in sessions like the one tonight, because they're trained to use their medical brains and to be good listeners.
Yes.
In that context. But they need to be good listeners across the whole spread of the things that their patients are willing to talk about.
Yeah, and it's not just listening. It's actually being able to, you know, when you're sharing stories, it's something that you do together. Right, so it's not just, you know, it's like this passive person listening. Though, as physicians, you know, I think the literature shows that, you know, we interrupt people like what 23 seconds. You know, people talk and we interrupt. Or I think it was 18 seconds, or it's 23 now. Or
we're waiting longer to interrupt. That is a good thing, right?
You just interrupted me.
Sorry.
NPR host and doctors. No, I'm joking around. But being able to sort of listen and ask questions. You know, to be able to sort of have a conversation with them, and I think that's where sort of empathy begins, right? That's when we sort of empathy. And people, you know, oftentimes in medical schools or in courses, they talk about empathy as, you know, it sort of gets billed as a script, whether it actually is, like, these are the words you say, but really, I think empathy evolves and bubbles up from having these sort of like just, you know, engaging conversations, even if they're short conversations.
So it's interesting that we're having this conversation. And when you came into the room, I mentioned we'd had an earlier discussion with Drs. Ronald Schlieffer and Jerry Van Natta at the University of Oklahoma, who wrote a book called The Chief Concern of Medicine, which was about right. making sure you get the narratives right. And so I know you hadn't heard about them before, but this is very much the same sort of thing where you're saying you need to be able to tell a good story here, to be able to give a good narrative in order to deliver good medicine.
Right. And I think it works. It works in many different ways. You know, there's studies now about the fact that, you know what, how do we advocate for our patients and advocate on a public policy level? Like sometimes data is not enough. And actually, there's been studies that show that you got to tell a convincing story. You got to be able to tell a story. You got to put the facts. You got to put the data in context to engage people. So it's not just sort of, you know, me and you right here or my patients and myself, but it works on both a private level, a personal level, but in a larger societal level as we try to communicate the experiences of advocating for our patients, especially in a time when, you know, health, we're in this moment, this really transitional moment of healthcare mm-hmm. reform. And I deal with so many patients who are just facing such terrible burdens that really have impact, that impact their health. You know, regardless of what I do, they're challenged to get better because of the communities that they live in, because of the money that they don't have, and they all impact on their health.
Is there some pushback or tut-tutting among older figures in medicine? It's like, oh, come on, don't cloud the brains of medical professionals with non-medical things.
I don't know if there's pushback from an ideological perspective in saying, you know what, this is not important. My sense is that if the pushback really comes from, we only have so much time in the curriculum and we need to cover X, Y, and Z. You know, we need to cover this. And, like, where do we fit this? Like, if we fit this in, we cut something else. You know, our students have to take their board exams. They have certain metrics that they have to meet. There's certain mandatory content that they must get. But as I'll talk about tonight, you know, a lot of what I learned in medical school, you know, I realized, you know, made me a really good medical student, but it didn't necessarily prepare me to be a really good doctor, which involved a lot of this work, you know, understanding story, understanding narrative, being able to pay attention to language, become comfortable with uncertainty, which is very different when you're a medical student and you're saying there is a right answer. There is a right answer to this problem. And then when you get out there and you go, God, you know, there might be a right answer or an answer, but it might not be the answer. And being comfortable with yourself and how do you have these conversations that are based on sort of the limits of knowledge, like the boundaries, like, listen, this is what we know, this is what we don't know. And being able to have these conversations and educate your patients as well.
Is that a tough one for people in the medical business to get to, the whole, like, we really don't know what we're up against here?
I think it's hard. You know, there's been a growing body of literature over the last couple of years that, you know, are, and I'll mention this a little bit tonight, that really say, you know, we need to sort of normalize uncertainty in medicine. There was an article in the New England Journal last year about uncertainty and prognosis. And they said, you know, we have to normalize uncertainty. We have to be able to become comfortable as physicians or healthcare providers with what we know and what we don't know, and to be able to articulate that to our patients in a way that is sort of both caring and concerning, but realizing the fact that this is what we know, this is what we don't know, and this is some options of how we're going to move forward.
Medical ethics is among your subjects, I noticed, and you were just talking about the transition time in medicine with the Affordable Care Act, and, yeah. Of course, in the state of Oregon, there's been all sorts of changes as well, trying to get ahead of the Medicaid curve. And then you got technology getting in there, too. So you got new tools in medicine and new tools that are out there in the world at large. I mean, are you guys walking around the ER with smartphones at this point?
Right.
Really?
I mean, I have... We call it a portable brains.
Yeah, right. There's storage outside the cranium.
But I think this is, you know, you're absolutely right. And so where, and I think we're, we have a fascination as a society with shiny new things, right? We love technology, you know, we do. I mean, and you know, there's talk about the iPhone or handheld devices then being plugged in and having apps and doing, you know, being able to do home monitoring, cardiac monitoring, or doing ultrasound with, you know, with a quarter or something ridiculously small. However, you know, my feeling is that, you know, it doesn't make a difference what technology you have if you don't get the story right. Like, you have to have the context right. And I think you have to be careful about leaning too much on technology. And also, I have patients who can't even get their basic meds filled. Right? They have basic needs that aren't being addressed. So I just, you know, I don't want to be a Luddite, but I do feel that when we move forward with technology, it's really important that we don't do that at the expense of the fact that there's a whole growing segment of our population that is really just can't get the basic things. They can't get, you know, they're not taking their insulin every day because they can't afford it. They can't afford their inhalers for their asthma. I mean, little things that they're unattractive things, but they're the basis of what we do as physicians. So we can't move forward without leaving a whole segment of the population behind.
Well, I know the seating is limited tonight for Why Healthcare Providers Should Think Like Creative Writers, so I'm glad you gave us a chance to visit with you here on the Jefferson Exchange.
It was a pleasure, Jeffrey. Thank you so much.
Dr. Jay Baruch, thanks so much for joining us today. That'll do it for today's Jefferson Exchange. If you're listening in the morning, the takeaway is coming up next. If you're listening to our evening rebroadcast, we'll be followed by news from the BBC. Tomorrow, Friday on the Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about support groups for disease sufferers and their families. We'll talk about the upcoming MS Walk coming to Central Point and about the efforts against multiple sclerosis generally. And then at 9 o'clock, after several years of an absence, we'll get another visit from Swami Beyondananda. Steve Behrman, the traveling cosmic comic, will join us here on the Jefferson Exchange. That's all tomorrow on the Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant on the board today, Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.